Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, email, Google+, simple ways that you can share Issues Etc. programs with your friends, relatives, and fellow parishioners. Just go to Listen on Demand Archives at issuesetc.org and look for the share feature images posted beneath each audio segment. You're only one click away from telling someone about Issues Etc. The Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org and look for Share This.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. It has been said that head-for-head more Christians have been persecuted in the 20th and 21st centuries, even as short as the 21st century has been so far, than in all previous centuries of Christian history put together. And I've heard that statistic a lot. Even if that were not true, there is no doubt that Christian persecution is alive and well in the world today. You don't have to go to extreme places like atheistic communism or to nations where Islam is in political sway, although those places are hotbeds for Christian persecution. Why is this widespread persecution of Christians at all different levels, some to the point of martyrdom, so underreported? Joining us to talk about the persecution of Christians on this Friday afternoon, June 20th, Paul Marshall. He's senior fellow at the Hudson's Institute Center for Religious Freedom. He's co-author of the book Persecuted, The Global Assault on Christians, and author of an article in the Weekly Standard titled The War on Christians. Paul, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you very much for having me, Todd. I'm glad to be here.
Why is this widespread persecution of Christians, and it really is global, why is it so underreported?
I think at least two things. One is religious issues in general are underreported. Even, newspapers and TV stations in America are shedding religion reporters. The last religion reporter in the English daily newspapers ended her work last week, so now there are none. That's a symptom that religion itself in the media is getting less and less attention, even though religion is increasingly significant in the world. So in many cases, they just, I'm not even talking about religious freedom, religious persecution right now, just religion and its significance in the world. That gets missed. And then secondly, if we look particularly at Christians and the persecution of Christians, I think with many journalists, there's still the old sort of Victorian image that Christians are white Westerners, that Christians people who live in, they live in Kansas, they may live in a couple of other places, but they're still not aware that the vast majority of Christians live outside the West. So they tend not to notice what's happening. If I could just add, the main thing which is missing in our general media is to see the pattern that this is ongoing. It's happening every day. When something big happens, when the Catholic cathedral in Baghdad was bombed and 60, 70 people killed, that was reported. It was reported well as an incident. When a church in Pakistan was bombed last October, that was reported. So when there's a big event, another one, the kidnapping of those schoolgirls, vast majority of them Christian, in Nigeria, that's reported as an event. People see that. It's important. They do it. But the fact that this is ongoing, that it has patterns, it's day after day, and it's affecting tens of millions, hundreds of millions of people, that's what's missing.
Is it often, it sounds like what you're saying, often the event itself is covered, but the angle at which it is viewed is generally political and as non-religious as possible. I'm taking the case of the 300-plus schoolgirls who Boko Haram still hold are selling off. I don't think I've read many reports that have noted that these are girls who are being educated in a Christian education. That would change the angle of the story, wouldn't it?
It would, and it was in a Christian area. And Boko Haram, let me add, Boko Haram kills Muslims too. Because, Muslims who are in school, they regard as apostates, not true Muslims. So they kidnap Muslim girls too. But they went to a Christian area, and the majority of those girls were Christian. And as we saw in the media, it says they were being forced to convert to Islam, which implied that, well, they weren't Muslims to begin with. So there is that downplaying. Until a couple of months ago, dealing with Boko Haram, you know, this is a savage Al-Qaeda-affiliated militia with thousands of fighters in Nigeria. The New York Times, until a few months ago, it's changed a bit now, was saying that their motives are mysterious. But Al-Qaeda publishes videos. It puts out press releases about what it's doing. It wants an Islamic State in northern Nigeria, and it wants to subdue infidels and Muslims who disagree with it. There's no mystery. I think the New York Times, and I can't get inside the reporter's head, obviously, was thinking, well, we can't see a straight political motive here. We just have this religion stuff. We need to get beyond the religion to find the real motive. I think this is often the case. And you know, as you mentioned, then people are looking for a very narrow political angle. And this is true with religion. Generally, the religious stuff, like Pope Francis and the Ecumenical Patriarch Bartholomew in Israel last month, people were saying, what's this mean for the peace talks? What's it mean for that? And all these angles. Everything was studied except for what Bartholomew said and Francis said, that this was the 50th anniversary of the first meeting of the Pope and the Ecumenical Patriarch, you know, in centuries. So, yeah, there's a tendency always to look for another angle.
Let's talk about some specific regions, areas, even countries. One that is not surprisingly back in the press, Iraq. What is the state of affairs for Christians in that country right now?
It's terrible. Worse than it has ever been. I'm not talking about 1,000 years ago. I'm talking about in the modern age. Canon Andrew White, often called the sort of Reverend of Baghdad, he's been running a church there. He's a very careful, thorough, courageous man. He says it's been bad for a decade. It's the worst it has ever been. As our listeners will know, ISIS, the Islamic State in Syria and Iraq, has taken over big chunks of northern Iraq, including the city of Mosul. They have issued instructions to their fighters, which includes banning cigarettes, alcohol, music, all that stuff. But amongst them, this was released today, are the instructions that for the Christians, the infidels, you may take their women and behead the men. That's the instructions for when they take over an area with Christians in it, the males will be killed. The women will be taken into slavery. So that's, in the areas ISIS is getting. And Christians have been fleeing Iraq for the last decade. Over half have left the country. There were 1 to 1.5 million there 10 years ago. Many others have fled to the north into the Kurdish areas. But let me add, the areas that ISIS, the Islamic State people, have taken over is around Mosul, is the traditional heartland of Christianity in within Iraq. The city of Nineveh is the Nineveh Plains, and our listeners might remember that Nineveh is the city that Jonah was sent to preach, and Nineveh is still there, and still a Christian heartland.
Let's talk a little bit about North Korea. How would you describe the situation there?
Probably the most highly repressive of place of Christians. You know, more people are getting killed in Nigeria. You have all these attacks now on Christians in Iraq. But for sort of an ongoing state repressing Christians, North Korea is probably the worst. I mean, professing Christianity is illegal. If I may plug a book I co-authored with some colleagues last year called Persecuted, The Global Assault on Christians. We described how one woman was shot by a firing squad because she was simply found with a Bible in her possession. if you're caught practicing Christianity, not only you, but your relatives for three generations can be thrown into a labor camp. And those camps are so terrible that people usually die in them. So Christianity is simply illegal there. And if you're caught practicing it, then the consequences are very dire. China is much easier than North Korea, but you're still getting repression in China or Vietnam or Laos. So remaining official communist countries are still bad for Christians.
In North Korea, why is Christianity considered dangerous to the interests of the state there? We all know the story with communism, but there seems to be a more virulent kind of mindset in North Korea. What's going on there?
It regards any independent organization as a threat. It's the meaning of the word totalitarian, the totalitarian state, is it's total. Everything in society must be part of the state. Any independent act, word, thought, belief is understood to be a threat or a violation of the regime. So that's what you're still getting in North Korea. Maybe another factor is that the Kim family, who, it's the third generation now of the Kim family has been running it, regard themselves basically as divine, with the pictures and the praise for them isn't just great leaders, but immortal. The father of this dynasty, Kim Il-sung, who died, I need to check, probably 12, 15 years ago, is still the president of North Korea, though he's been dead 15 years. He's officially the president of the country. His son and now his grandson sort of act in his place almost as vice regents. So it's essentially like the Roman Empire in some of its phases. The ruler is regarded as divine. And if you say something else is divine, then that's immediate challenge and insult to them.
Now, China, you mentioned before, has been westernizing, at least in its economy, by sheer force of gravity, kind of the centripetal force of the world's economy with that many people. But do Christians fare any better now than, say, 30 years ago in China?
30 years ago, probably yes. Certainly than 40 or 50. When you had, under Mao Zedong, when you had the Cultural Revolution and these sorts of events, all churches were closed. Christians were thrown into prison camps en masse. We're not getting that now. So there is an improvement, but it's been static for about 20 years. And in fact, when China hosted the Olympics, it got worse and it stayed at a lower level. You have the situation now that in China, you have legal churches, what are called three self-churches. They're self-governing, and Catholic and Protestant versions. And there's about probably 20 million people in those. And then you have the churches, Catholic and Protestant, which refuse to register. We usually call them underground churches or house churches. And they have 60, 70, 80 million members. And so the government's in a quandary. It wants to close down these house churches, especially the ones which show some independence. But the church is growing very rapidly. And they're not sure how to stop that unless they shot everybody. And praise God, they're not brutal enough, I don't think, that they're going to do that. So they're at a bit of a loss. But they keep arresting pastors and leaders who get out of line or too outspoken. And then a recent development is that official government-registered churches are also coming under pressure. A huge 3,000-member legal church in Guangzhou in China. Guangzhou is often called the Jerusalem of China because it has so many Christians. The Chinese government complained about the cross on the building and that all the documents, the building wasn't legal. It violated planning regulations. It shouldn't have the cross on top. The church argued that that wasn't true. But rather than sort of thrash this out and work it out as we would do in courts and make changes necessary, the government demolished the entire building. and it's demolished other buildings there and taken the crosses off. And it just seems to be, the New York Times did report this very well. Behind it just appears to be a government fear that the churches are so prominent, so public. They're, you know, another center of loyalty other than the state and the Communist Party. So again, that is a threat. So China is not what it was under Mao Zedong, but it's still a repressive state. And as there are probably over 80 million Christians in China, it may be much larger. China is the country which, you know, represses the most Christians because there are so many there.
Write in the article about how various European leaders, the Prime Minister of Great Britain, Angela Merkel, various others, recognize the case of Christian persecution for what it is. Although you also quote Secretary of State John Kerry kind of equivocating when it comes to that. Yes, Christians are persecuted, but other religions suffer as well. Why the equivocation on the part of the U.S. State Department when it comes to Christian persecution worldwide?
I think, well, firstly, it's the State Department usually doesn't like taking up religious freedom issues. Generally, it gets in the way. I think there's a mindset they can't do much, and it annoys other countries, so let's put it aside. But with the persecution of Christians, I think it's that because America is seen in the world at large as a Christian country, I don't, you know, necessarily mean a confessional state, but there's a lot of Christians there. It has a Christian heritage. The State Department seems to be deadly afraid that if it speaks too much about Christians, it will be accused of, the accusation is made anyway, that you just care about Christians, you don't care about other religious groups. People are always saying, oh, it's all a smokescreen to defend Western missionaries. So the State Department seems to be so worried about that type of accusation that it leans over backwards and ignores what happens to Christians when it would not ignore another religious group as similarly situated. So I won't go through all the details, but you can go through State Department press releases, and it will highlight and make a statement about a fairly minor event involving a religious group. But a major thing involving Christians is passed over in silence. One example I give was after Boko Haram, I think 2 years ago, on Easter morning, bombed a church. A suicide bombing of a church in Nigeria, killing 48 people. The only State Department release that day about religious freedom was about the Roma people in Europe, people we call, you know, it's not a good word now, gypsies, about their situation in Europe, which is worth commenting on. But you just had a suicide bombing of a church on Easter morning. Doesn't that bear some comment? So I think there's this shying away from the issue, which we need to get over, because people will make that, no matter how much the State Department, you know, speaks up for other religious groups, which it does, and I'm glad it does, people will always make the excuse that, you know, you're just talking about Christians. So I think we need to be out there speaking loudly about what's happening. And because, as I mentioned in that article, any of the authorities, who serious sociologists who look at this, say Christians are persecuted in more places in the world than any other religious group. So, and that's not being reflected in our government statements.
With only about 30 seconds, religious leaders, you note a coalition of religious leaders that are trying to address this issue. How would you summarize that with about 30 seconds, Paul?
Okay, last month in Washington, D.C., Frank Wolf, a Republican, and Anna Eshoo, who's a Democrat, who chaired the Religious Freedom Minorities Caucus in the House of Representatives, called a meeting of religious leaders, Catholic, Protestants, Greek Orthodox, Armenian Orthodox, National Association of Evangelicals, Lutherans, others, across the board, for a statement about the plight of Christians in the Middle East, Syria, Iraq, and Egypt, because that's getting worse, and were asking, all Christians were asking, well, everybody, to get behind that, particularly to appoint a special envoy for religious minorities in the Middle East. Write to your member of Congress and to your senators about this. So I think this is a major move of such a wide variety of Christian leaders, more than ever before, on this issue. I think that's a very positive sign.
Folks, you'll find a link to the Hudson's Institute Center for Religious Freedom at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Paul Marshall, a senior fellow at the Hudson's Institute Center for Religious Freedom, co-author of the book Persecuted, The Global Assault on Christians, and author of an article in the recent Weekly Standard titled The War on Christians. And we'll also post a link to that column as well at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Paul, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you for having me, Todd.
When we come back, Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer is going to join us. He joins us every week for our series on Christ in the Old Testament. We'll be in Jeremiah chapter 20. Jeremiah is persecuted, and we'll find out by whom and why right after this.
Molly Ziegler-Hemingway will present the inaugural Village Lutheran Lecture on Christianity and Culture, July 19th, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. at Village Lutheran Church, Ladue, Missouri. Her topic will be Tales from the Front, Religious Liberty and the Media, July 19th, 9 to 11 a.m. at Village Lutheran Church, 9237 Clayton Road in Ladue, Missouri. We invite you to join us for this free and highly beneficial opportunity.
Bethany Lutheran College is pleased to sponsor Issues Etc. and Lutheran Public Radio. Bethany Lutheran College is located in the picturesque river town of Mankato, Minnesota, and is committed to making Christian higher education affordable for all with generous financial aid packages available. At Bethany, you'll find stimulating academic programs, a friendly atmosphere, and opportunities to grow both in intellect and in your faith, all within the framework of a supportive Christian environment. For more information, visit us on the web at blc.edu.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Would you like for us to post information about your congregation on the Find a Church page of our website? We'll add your church when it becomes part of the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues Etc. Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. to your church's mission or advertising budget. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 at issuesetc.org. Click support and publicize your congregation to the world.
Hi, this is Pastor Dan Kistler of Our Savior's Lutheran Church in Pacifica, California. A small congregation on the Pacific Coast just south of San Francisco, we invite you to join us as we receive Christ's gifts of forgiveness, life, and salvation that He won for us on the cross and now delivers to us through His Word, baptism, and the Lord's Supper. For more information about us or for free downloadable sermons, visit our website at oursaviorspacifica.com. God's peace be with you always in our Savior, Jesus Christ.